Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome to downtown St. Louis and the Lumiere Poker Room. I am Paul Harris, sitting aside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, and I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
I definitely ate too much.
That's what the holiday's all about. Gluttony.
Yeah, did it too many times and still eating leftover turkey, so what the heck.
Well, we're poker players. We look at that table full of food and we say, all in.
Okay. Yeah, that's about right. No. Wait, well, you ever try and do a rebuy at a turkey table? Okay.
I've sat down at a table with a bunch of turkeys before. Speaking of which, also joining us from his home in Southern California is the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul.
Yeah. Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving as well.
Very good, very good.
Joe, do I dare ask about our diet bet after Thanksgiving?
Well, I'm just kind of hovering about the same, you know, just overweight and not really doing much of anything yet to kind of lose the weight. So you're in pretty good shape this time. Last time I was going for it, and this time I'm just kind of fizzling out.
Well, you know what? You've got a month before you have to start making your New Year's resolutions to lose weight. That lie we all tell ourselves every year. Maybe in the new year we'll have a three-way prop bet going on weight.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. Coming up on the show today, we've got a story of a kid who broke an online record. We've got a story of some housewives who got busted for playing poker. We've got a story of a billionaire buying out another billionaire. We've got an update on the UIGEA, which is the law that has inhibited some banks and financial institutions from allowing you to get online to play poker, and we'll have a representative from one of our sponsors, the Poker Players Alliance, to join us. Brian Spadaro will be on later on this hour. Joe, what are you going to be talking about today in your poker coach segment?
I think what we'll start out with, Paul, is talking a little bit about some tells. And in the rare times where a couple of tells can be either strength or weakness, and how to sniff out which is which.
Okay, good. We'll get to all of that a little bit later on. Now, before we get to anything else, your buddy Darvin Moon was at a huge Monday Night Football game last night, which is why he can't be with us today, right? He's flying back to Maryland today?
This is true. He'll be here next week and everything, but couldn't do it this week. I talked to him twice last week, and he was so excited about it and going down there and the events surrounding it and being able to see in a prime seat the game of the year for New Orleans so far.
Yeah, the Saints and the Patriots, and the Saints crushed them.
Oh, it wasn't even a game. It was amazing. I could not believe the difference. Do a comparison of the two quarterbacks after the game. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's a rookie versus a pro.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. I mean, you got Tom Brady against Drew Brees, and Brees was remarkable.
Phenomenal.
Remarkable.
If you play fantasy football and you had Drew Brees, let me tell you, you're smiling today.
Yeah. We'll have to find out from Darvin whether he got to go on the field or got to talk to the guys, because he's famous for being at the final table of the main event this year wearing his Saints hat. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he'll have stories about that. He will be on with us next week, schedule permitting.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you, though, is I know that you were in New York with Joe Cada a couple of weeks ago,
yes.
And you kind of have acted as kind of a guy who's been there giving advice to these two guys and some of the guys who signed with PokerStars Joe. I'm curious if Darvin has said to you, hey, you know what? This made you a millionaire. It made me a millionaire. What should I do with my money?
Let me tell you, I'm not going to try and give anybody some advice to it other than the fact that there's no hurry. It's beautiful. You've got it. Put it in the bank. Take your time. Make sure you secure your future and do with it what you want.
Yeah.
There is no hurry. It's amazing, but there's always somebody tomorrow asking you to spend your money.
Yes. And I'm sure, like I know happened to you,
there
will be lots of people coming around who would be more than happy. Hey, I have this thing I want you to invest in. Hey, can you lend me this for this? Or can you put me into tournaments and all that sort of stuff?
All that stuff goes on, and I'm sure he's getting a ton of it. In fact, we talked about that for a little while on it. It's a subject that, it's kind of uncomfortable to talk about at times, but it definitely happens. You have to be prepared for it and ready. Just remember, it's your future. you're the one that earned this money. Mm-hmm. You owe nobody anything concerning it, even though people seem to assume that, you know, well, you've got money, you owe me.
Well, in his case, he owes his wife a little bit of money.
Well, yeah, I'm telling you, they're riding lawnmowers. He's not going to do it, I don't think.
But when we do have Darvin on, I'm not going to ask him, you know, what did you spend the money on? You know, what are you investing in? Because, frankly, that's none of our business. And by the way, I tell people that the same because, you know, they know that we don't just do the show together, but that we're friends and we've actually done business together. And so they'll say to me, what's the story with Dennis? Is he buying his trucking company? Is he investing in this? Is he doing that? And I say, you know what? I don't really think Dennis's finances are any of your business. You know, if they ask you and you want to tell them, that's fine. But as a friend, it's not my place, even if I know, to step in and say, well, let me tell you, here's what Dennis is doing. This number of dollars, you know, like when you went on high stakes poker.
Yeah, yeah.
How much money is he going to be taking on there? You know what? Ask him. Don't ask me. Don't put me in the position there. And so I'm not going to be asking Darvin any of those questions either. I don't want anybody asking me about my finances. Particularly about my poker finances this year.
So later today on the show, Dennis is going to be telling all of that.
Oh, there you go. Okay, thanks a lot, Joe.
Speaking of... Dennis is going to go over all of that for everybody.
Yeah, I've got a detailed listing here of all my finances I'm going to do.
I don't think
By the way, is the IRS listening?
Yes.
No, never mind. And by the way, how did you do on this WSOP qualifier this weekend?
I played in two of them.
All right.
The first time I played the WSOP qualifiers here in St. Louis, as in other places around the country, is effectively a two-level sit-and-go.
Yes.
You play against a full table. It's a full ring game. You play against them, and if you are the last man standing at your table, then you go on to the second one. All 10 table winners then play another single table sit and go. So effectively, you only have to beat 9 people and then 9 people, 18 people, and then you win a seat into a main event. This is how you got in there two years ago. So I'm just trying to follow in your footsteps there. The first time I did it a couple of weekends ago, I got down to heads up at my table, and I was a 19-1 underdog in chips. The guy who I was up against had felted 4 other people in a row in like 5 minutes. And so it took about 2 hands, and I went out.
Did you ask him to if he wanted to concede?
I asked him if he wanted to chop.
Oh, okay.
but as a joke, there's no chop there. So this weekend I get in there, and I'm playing fairly solid, and I end up getting heads up with a guy, and we come down to a point where he's got about 60% of the chips, and I've got about 40% of the chips. And he's on the button, so he's in the small blind. And the blinds are 300, 600. He raises to 2,000. I look down at ace of hearts, king of hearts. Now, how many times in the last year have I said, Dennis, stop putting all your money on the line in tournaments with ace king? I mean, that's how you got knocked out of this year's main event. You got knocked out of the event in Hammond this year. And a couple of other times you and I have talked about, I've scolded you, even on this show. Don't get your money in with ace-king. Well, at this point, I've only got about 7,500 in chips. He's got like 12,000. So he's made it 2,000. I'm not going to call there. Ace-king of hearts, I'm going to shove.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's raising light and he's going to lay it down, you know, and we'll essentially just tighten things up a little bit. So I do. I do exactly that. I shove, and he thinks for about 10 seconds, and then he calls. Queen-jack offsuit.
Okay.
Reminiscent of our friend Mr. Moon.
There you go.
Calling with queen-jack, except at this point he's got more chips than I do. The board comes ace-king-deuce, so I flop two pair. But I know in the world of Paul Harris and also Joe McGowan that I'm actually drawing dead. Right, Joe? He's got ace, king, queen, jack. Only 4 cards in the deck can get me. A 4 outer is going to get me, and sure enough, a 10 comes on the river, makes him his straight, and I'm done. So I am now installing that rule for myself. No more putting all my money on the line with ace, king. The sick part of it is if I hadn't shoved there, if I just call the 2,000,
oh, yeah.
Flop comes ace, king, deuce.
Yeah. He's gone.
I'm first to act. I'm going to bet out. He's going to fold. I'm going to take that pot down. Yeah. Doesn't go on to say that I win the table, but just one of those horrible, sick beats.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think you probably played it right, Paul, to tell you the truth. Just listening to it quickly, you know, with that much money in there and what the blinds are and him likely to call you maybe with a worse ace.
Yeah,
probably a pretty good spot. Wouldn't you say, Dennis, in all honesty?
In honesty, the correct move right there is in the poker is to go ahead and put all your chips in, obviously.
Yeah.
I still sometimes
heads up,
absolutely.
Chance.
Yeah. If it had been a reverse on the chip count, I might have tried a little different play there.
Do a little stop and go.
A little stop and go, exactly.
Yeah.
If you were the chip leader.
Yes.
But you're behind, it's going to cost you 25% of your chips just to call him. Yeah, yeah, that's a shove time.
Yeah.
That could be another segment for down the road for me, Paul, and Dennis, is you could probably call that something like, when you're running bad or poor, how that can change how you play in a negative way. People start to tighten up or start to think, oh, if I do this, this is what's been happening to me. That could even be a whole nother show.
Yeah, that'll be a good poker coach segment that we may do sometime in the future. All right, so enough of my bad beat whining. I don't tell bad beat stories like this. It's only because it was the Ace King, and I recently been on your back about it. So now you could be on my back for doing that.
Okay, it's your turn, Joe.
Let's get to some news here, particularly news of a 22-year-old Russian pro who set a new world record this weekend. Saturday morning at 8:30, he sits down to try to play more than 40,000 hands online in a 24-hour period.
What he does, and he's playing on PokerStars.
Yes.
What he's doing, it's... They didn't know exactly how many hands he could get in. He played a number of times before and got 20,000 hands in a day.
Yep.
But he said, it's time to break the world record. I think I can do this.
So he goes online and he plays for 18 hours and 33 minutes. And by the time the next morning comes around, he has broken it by getting to 40,088 poker hands without stopping. Now, I did some math on this. If you take 18 hours and 33 minutes and do the multiplication and then the division, this guy was averaging 36 hands, not per hour, but 36 hands a minute. So he's obviously multi-tabling. But how many tables could he be playing at once?
Well, I mean,
how did he do? I'd like to know how much money he made or lost.
Oh, no. Cut half of that out. There's no way in the world playing like that he made any money. I wonder how much he lost doing it. But, again, the only way to do it, what was it, Havad had 43 that he played.
Havad Khan was multi-tabling somewhere in the 40s. I can't remember what it was.
And there's been a couple other people who have been in that range.
But to do it for 18 straight hours,
yeah,
I realize when you're multi-tabling, you're folding 98% of your hands.
Yeah.
There's a lot of you're clicking the fold button even before the rest of the action goes around because screens are coming up boop, 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 boop constantly
as
you go along. So he's obviously doing that.
Probably when you're trying to win, you're folding 98%. But if you have to play the hand, I'm completely unfamiliar with this, guys. Is that how it worked? You had to play the hand or call the flop for it to count?
No, he just saw that many hands.
So he could actually fold that many hands. And it would count?
Yeah, could he just fold it? Well, then he's going to just be losing his blinds all the way around. But still,
he could actually still possibly maybe... win if he's playing really, really small games.
We don't know the stakes he was playing.
They call it set mining, you just call all the pocket pairs.
I'm quite sure that he was only playing premium hands or something like that.
Yeah.
Eights and above, he plays. Ace King, he plays. Maybe everything else, he folds. I don't know.
I don't even know if it goes as low as eights. I would think it has to be paint.
Well, could be. I mean, I'm just grabbing the numbers.
He's playing what we used to play in our home game. Jacks are better. Except he's not
any pocket pair and something like that. I think you'd want to actually call. Just to make it easy and fast. You flop a set, then you play. And if not, and you're probably going to get paid. In the smaller games. And then
here's what
I
question.
There you go.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. As you get knocked out of it, though, what do you do? I mean, just taking time to rebuy, to do anything like that takes time out of any action other than folding or betting.
I'd be interested, as Joe said, I'd be interested in finding out whether he won or lost, and I want to know what the stakes were. If he's playing micro stakes, and he bought in for a lot, and he's playing tiny little 1 and 2 cent games and that sort of stuff, that's also going to change the way you play and the number of hands you play and what your starting cards are going to be and all of that. But think about it in terms of the rest of us who play a lot of live games. I mean, if you sit down in a live game and the game is moving along pretty quickly, maybe you're getting 30 hands an hour, right?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe you're getting 30 hands an hour.
Yeah.
In a live game.
Yeah, if a good dealer, if they have a shuffle machine, you can get 20 hands a half an hour.
Yeah, but if there's no limit, if there's no limit at any kind of decent stakes, there's always one hand in the hour where somebody goes in the tank for a minute or two.
Yeah, full game might be a little slower. But
Plus, I'm also thinking averaging out over a long session of 18 hours, you know, even if you average 30 hands an hour, that's only 540 hands. This guy played 40,000 hands.
You do realize 40,000 hands is more than a lot of players play in a lifetime?
Yes. Well, you know, that's what they say about the young online pros is, you know, they're playing and seeing more hands than most poker pros will see in their entire life. Now, are they gaining experience from all of that? They're pretty good at folding. that's the one thing we know. They're instant folding.
There are a lot of things that happen, though, in real time, no matter how many hands you play online.
That's really
true. Just take time. But I also wonder, you know, with that, it's kind of interesting little topic there. For if I was 22 or 23 and I was, you know, in that deal and playing online and he did it in 18 hours, I'd think, okay, maybe I'll take a shot at this. You know, maybe I can get in there and just have a little fun with it. If he did it in 18, I'm sure within probably a month that record will be gone. If he was able to do it in 18, there's got to be a couple guys that say, hey, I play millions of hands. I play a lot. You know, I'll take that record down now and I'll play 50,000 hands, you know, and I'll do it in 22 hours.
Yeah,
I hadn't gone there, but I think you're exactly right.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. Like we were talking about a couple of weeks ago with Darvin Moon in his 40s and Joe Cada at 21 years old, there's also a stamina thing there. This record will not be broken by a middle-aged guy.
Hey, now, I wanted to say something about that last time when that came up, and I didn't. This is funny. Now I have my shot. I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not the spring chicken 22. I'm 40, and Dennis really isn't much older than me, but... boy, I'll take Dennis in the ring against a lot of those guys. I mean, I'm the guy, you know, I played the other night Saturday. I played till 1 o'clock the next day, which is one of the longest sessions I've ever played. And for me, you know, I'm done for the next 2 days. You know, I'm going to be messed. My next day is ruined. Well, like, I think Dennis, you know, he's a guy that can get 4 hours of sleep, get up, do all the emails, phone calls, do this, do that, go play, have a great session, play smart, witty, you know, great poker. And then play the next day and get 4 hours of sleep, and he's, like, ready to go. If I don't have 8 hours each night and everything lines up perfectly, I don't even like to play. I'm one of those guys. I'm very careful in my game selection and when I play and what type of mood I'm in, what my thinking's like, how well I slept. I'd say, you know, Dennis, he could go play, and I'd put him in there against anybody. Really. You know, Dennis, would you kind of agree a little bit with what I'm saying, right?
I love playing the game, and I even before I was playing much poker, I don't sleep very much. Mm-hmm. You know, 4 or 5 hours a night's basically all. Just all my life, I've always worked 2 or 3 jobs. I've always done a lot of things.
Do you think having that stamina is one of the things that helped you do so well and last so long, playing long session after long session after long session in the main event?
What I stated before in 08, I made the majority of my money the first 7 days after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I took advantage because, again, this falls dead on line with a lot of things that Joe has been advising people on. You get a little tired, then all the things start coming out. You start getting more predictable on your bets. Your tells are a little more noticeable. You start getting distracted at the table.
You're not concentrating
as much
on everybody else. Yeah.
Your brain is looking for something to keep it excited. Therefore, it's looking to play for a hand. And you start playing a little hands you shouldn't have.
Yep.
Now, there's a ton of things here on this. I love playing people right after they've had a heavy meal or after they've played like 10 or 12 hours or something like that. It's time to pick up some chips.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. By the way, your email is always welcome. The show's email address is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. We'll take a break here, and then we'll come back and talk more. Joe's got the Poker Coach segment coming up. We'll have an update on the UIGEA, which has been delayed, the implementation of some of the financial rules for 6 months or so. We'll fill you in on what that means for everybody as we move forward here. But this segment of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.
PokerStars is just getting amazing, the way they're growing around the world. You've got an APT, an EPT, an LAPT. They just started another new one now, the UKIPT, United Kingdom and Ireland Poker Tour. You can't go anywhere in the world without finding PokerStars and finding a tournament to play in.
In fact, I think the Australian Poker Tour is going on right now, isn't it?
Absolutely is. They've released the schedule for the LAPT. It's just unbelievable. If you guys want to take a heck of a vacation, go to PokerStars.net, qualify through these free rolls. You can win your way on to the PCA, to LAPT, to any of this alphabet soup of places, and play in areas you've only dreamed of going to before. At their expense, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Go to it, enjoy it, have some fun. I'm telling you, PokerStars, it's growing by leaps and bounds. The gentleman here from Russia that did this, he did this on PokerStars.
If you want to get to PokerStars.net, you can click the sponsor link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And we will be right back.
That Yuletide soul is in the air.
Merry Christmas, pretty baby.
Aaron Neville and his quintet, featuring Charles Neville.
This is my Christmas present.
A holiday show like no other, Friday, December 11th at the Lumiere Theater.
I'll be happy.
Tickets are on sale at Etc. inside Lumiere Place or at Ticketmaster.com for $35. Don't miss Aaron Neville Christmas.
Before they sit down to play today, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
With Joe, the poker coach McGowan, joining us by phone. He'll get to his poker coach segment in just a little while, and then we'll have an update for you on online legislation and a delay by the federal government, which we think is going to be good for poker players the world over. Getting back to a couple of other items in the news this morning, Dennis tells me that there's a story in Atlantic City and elsewhere about a guy by the name of Andy Beal.
Andy Beal, I'm just reading about this. He is a billionaire. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump was a billionaire, maybe a billionaire. Who knows anymore?
Right.
This thing. Anyhow, they're having a major problem with all three of the casinos in that. Andy Beal to the rescue. He's put a bid in to buy all three of the casinos.
Now, if you don't know who Andy Beal is, he is a billionaire banker from Texas who in the last decade has more than once gone to Las Vegas and invited the best pros in that town to play against him. Doyle Brunson, Todd Brunson, Phil Ivey, Howard Lederer, Annie Duke, Jennifer Harmon.
Yes.
And on and on and on.
The poker
pros formed a corporation, as they called it, because he only wanted to play them heads up. And I can't remember if he was playing them limit hold'em or no limit hold'em. I just know it was hold'em.
And
he would play them heads up for high stakes.
Yeah.
The kind of stakes where even Patrick Antonius and Phil Ivey and Tom Dwan would go, really? I think it was limit, and they were playing 100,000, 200,000. At one point, it started out like 50 and 100, and then went to 100,000, 200,000.
Wow!
So they were playing massive pots, massive amounts. And by the way, there was a book that came out a few years ago called "The Professor, the Banker, and the Suicide King." Did you read it?
I have not read it, but I remember about that. It was called "The Richest Poker Game of All Time."
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It told the story of this guy and about these pros who really were going in for the first time in their lives into a game scared. Because of the stakes, because it was so much money that was on the line. Millions and millions of dollars were changing hands, and sometimes he would get up on them, 4, 5, 6 million, and then get Phil Ivey in here or get Todd Brunson in here. I'm a little tired. You know, some guys who were in there actually got intimidated and said, you know what, I don't want to play. Call somebody else. And they would go in and play against this guy. In the end, the corporation, as I recall, got most of his money. Well, that's not right.
Okay.
Most of the money he brought to play
with. That's a major difference. Sir.
Most of his buy-in there. it's a billionaire, so it's not most of his money in any way. But it might have been $10 million that they were taking from him over a long weekend session. And he could call quits anytime. He could, you know what, I'm done. And he would just go to the airport, get on his plane, go back home. And then when he was ready to play again a year later, he'd call him and say, I'm coming in tomorrow.
Yeah.
You guys want a game? And they were playing against him. So now it's interesting to me that he is getting into the casino business.
Well, under this proposal, all right, he's taking one of his Dallas-based banks, and he's converting the whole $486 million mortgage on the casinos into equity. Just, okay, no problem.
Uh-huh.
He's absorbing all of their debt under this proposal. And he gets to walk in there and take over everything, lock, stock, and barrel. Everything from the busboy to the smallest chip will be Andy Beal's.
Is he buying out Trump, or is he financing Trump? I hope he's buying out Trump.
He's buying out. Donald Trump will have nothing to do with three casinos if this goes through.
So the name would come off the Taj?
No. Donald Trump now does not have ownership of the name.
So it could still be the Trump Taj Mahal?
It still could be.
Very, very.
Trump Taj Mahal, the Trump Plaza Hotel, and the Trump, what is it, Marina Hotel.
Yeah.
Down there.
See, if I'm Andy Beal and I'm buying that, I want that word off of there.
That's his choice, then.
Then again, you got to pay to change everything all the way down to the chips and that busboy's uniform.
True.
If you keep the name, you're just changing owners and a different guy is signing the paychecks.
Well, it's still just a proposal. We'll see what actually happens here, but he's one of the few people around that could actually make this proposal, and people go, yeah, he could do it.
Okay. I want to leave plenty of time for our poker coach segment and the rest of the stuff we have coming up in the second half of the show. So let me get a plug in for one of our sponsors here. It's One Time Apparel. I'm wearing one of their hats this afternoon. Dennis is wearing one of their shirts. One Time Apparel is becoming more and more the clothing for poker players all across the U.S. and internationally as well. All you have to do is go to the website, onetimeapparel.com, and you'll see your choices from baseball jerseys to polo shirts, from T-shirts to hoodies, from sports shirts to scoop neck T-shirts for the ladies. He's got organic stuff. He's got 100% cotton stuff. He's got shirts with all sorts of different wacky logos on them. He's got a Why Not Me shirt and a Lucky Leprechaun shirt. He's got fitted hats. He's got flexible hats. Hats full of aces. Not the kind you can pull out and put down at the table. Although 50 years ago, Amarillo Slim would have had one of those, wouldn't he? He's got pink camo hats for ladies and much more. Go to the website, onetimeapparel.com. Charge it to your credit card. Use PayPal. And you'll start looking like big-name pros like David Devilfish Elliott, who wore one of these when he was playing in the main event this summer. To get to the One Time Apparel website, you can always click the sponsors link on thechipleader.com. That's Dennis's website. That's also where you'll find podcasts of this show, The Lumiere Place Final Table, on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with a St. Louis poker pro who beat over 13,000 other players in 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to downtown St. Louis. This portion of our show is brought to you by Reactor Watch.
Reactor Watch, it's the watch I wear, and I'm telling you, no matter where I go, people look at the watch. And Monday Night Raw, and somebody texted me, nice watch. I mean, it's unbelievable. If you go to reactorwatch.com, the homepage for them, and you can connect that again through thechipleader.com, you'll also see a picture of a gentleman I've had the pleasure of meeting several times by the name of Albert Pujols, and he's holding up a watch, and guess what kind of watch it is? It's a Reactor watch.
Yeah.
He's wearing one of the Nucleus watches. I talked earlier about the Triton, which is the one they have overseas that all the troops are wearing that survived all of this, that they drop from bridges, that they run over with cars, all the other stuff on that. Well, the Nucleus is just as durable. These things are made with quality that is just bar none on that thing. And with Albert wearing that watch, I am proud to wear it, the same watch. Guys, if you ever want to buy a watch, and it'll be the last one you need to buy in your entire lifetime, buy a Reactor watch.
Now, I got an email from a listener who said, I hear you doing the Reactor watch commercials every week on your show. I don't have Dennis Phillips or Albert Pujols kind of money. Does Reactor have watches for me?
Yes, they do. They have a wide range of them, the whole bit. They will customize watches, or they will just give you one of their normal watches that you can buy off the shelf in a number of stores all around coast to coast. But even those are guaranteed. Period, for life. They don't sell a cheap watch, if you want to call it that. Everything they sell is quality, quality, quality.
Reactor Watch, sponsors of the Poker Coach segment here on the Lumiere Place Final Table, which means we bring Joe McGowan back in. And what's our lesson for today, Joe?
Well, like I said earlier, Paul, I think what we'll get into will be when a tell could be strength or could be weakness, and what you can look for and try to sniff out which is which.
Okay.
This could be slightly advanced. Oh, sorry, were you going to say something, Paul?
No, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. It could be slightly advanced, but I think it's good definitely for the intermediate players. It may not be as valuable for limit players. Certainly when you play limit, you might be getting 19-1, and even though you know your opponent's really strong, you might make the call anyway on the turn because the pot's lean, you set your humongous odds, and you would call. So in general, tells are not going to be as valuable in a limit game as they would be in no limit. But let's say, for instance, you're playing and a common tell that you'll see, you might see a guy where if a person has pocket sixes, the average person that looks at sixes, heart rate's relaxed, everything's kind of leveled, everything's normal. Not a very big hand. People limp around. You look down at the 2-6s, you're not going to get too excited. Typically, let's just say you call. Most people, when they have 6s, what are they going to say? Give me a 6. Come on, give me a 6 on the flop. Give me a 6. Boom, a 6 comes on the flop. What happens when you have that approach many times to many people, now they get excited. Boom, a 6 hit. Okay, heart rate increases. You might notice people call it chest heaving, you know, a little more heavy breathing. There might be other things that will go with it as well. That's certainly a sign of strength. Now, the problem that people can get into, when you see a player and they may be on a bluff, but the bluff could trigger the same type of reaction, the same type of look, the same heavy breathing. The heart rate can increase on some players, and it's fairly common. In general, a lot of people feel that when you're on the bluff, your heart rate isn't going to increase, you're not going to see the heavy breathing, but it's not quite true because many, many times people will have that type of feel and excitement and nervousness that will trigger that heavy breathing, and it can look the same. So you don't want to make a bad fold when you see that and someone's on the bluff. So how can you figure out which is which? Okay, now, during the final table of this year, there was a player that played at that final table. That up into the final table, I had noticed something very, very specific in that player. That's on the same lines of what we're talking about. When they had a big hand consistently for the last couple days in the main event and for the final table. And there was one or two times when this player would bluff and one time had the same type of look. So how could you tell the difference? What you really want to look for and what's most important, the person, when I said before, that has the pocket sixes, flops the set. It's something that's going to happen pretty much immediately. There's going to be a difference. You should be able to scan around the table. The flop comes out. Your eyes scan around the table at the people that are in the hand, if you're in the hand. And boom, you look at that guy, and all of a sudden there's a big difference. Action hasn't even gotten to him. All of a sudden, there's a lot of differences. One of them might be that heavy breathing, which is a very common tell. Likely, extremely likely, this guy's going to play the pot, and this guy has a pretty big hand, so you play the hand cautiously. Now, if it's a bluff, the big difference in the things you have to look for here, guys, is it may not happen at the right time, and it may not add up. That's when you can sniff out the bluff. For instance, it might be on the river. It might be, you may look at this other person, the river card comes out, you haven't seen any signs of strength, you haven't seen any tells, even betting pattern tells, to really indicate a really strong hand. Could be a draw, could be second pair, and you're just playing along, you make it to the river. River card comes out, you glance over at your opponent, you don't see anything. Action's on you, you make a bet. Now all of a sudden your opponent moves all in. Now you look at him. He's heavy breathing. There may be even a vein in his neck going a little crazy. Typically, those things add up to strength. But what was the difference? The major difference was it happened not really related once the cards came out. That's typically when the strength is going to be real, right then and right there. If it's delayed, that's the big key. What triggered it was the bluff. Okay, does that make sense to you, Paul?
Oh, absolutely.
Dennis?
It does to me. I mean, okay. Paul's shaking his head, dear, too. He's pretending he's on TV and he's shaking his head at me, but yes, it does make sense. It's a very good analysis of it. And I love the phrase you there that everything has to add up. If it doesn't add
right.
up, there's a reason,
yep.
You know. And I love that phraseology there on it. A couple of things you brought out there that I just love. The timing, the fact that you need to pay attention on the flop, not to the bloomin' flop,
yep.
to the players. It's so elementary, and so many people I see that don't do it.
And I notice, especially in lower limit games, players are much more likely to look at their cards and the board and not to look at the other eight or nine people who are around that table, looking for reactions, looking for how they are disinterested, or suddenly they're leaning forward and they're more interested, or suddenly breathing heavily, etc. Yeah. They're not interested in that because for a lot of people, those cards out there match my cards over here, so I'm going to be interested in this hand regardless of what else is going on around.
And the next thing they involuntarily do is they look at it, they see the cards, they get excited, and they look down at their chips.
Yes.
It's like, oh, gosh, how much can I bet?
Yeah.
You know, totally oblivious to the other people at the table.
So, Joe, how do you exploit this tell that you've seen that you then pick up as a bluff? Obviously, it's not just a matter of making a call because there may be times where you don't have much of a hand. How can you rebluff people who are doing that?
Well, that's a tricky thing, and that's a great question, Paul. There's many times where the bluffing hand could be the best hand. That guy could be bluffing, say, the pocket sixes he had and didn't flop a set and never hit anything. And now he's bluffing the river with pocket sixes, and you just have ace-queen, ace-high, say. So you have to determine, can I just, and I've done that before many times. I'm sure, Dennis, you've done that before. And Paul, you've probably done it too, where you call the guy down. You know he doesn't have anything. You know he's on the bluff. But the ace-high is no good.
Yep.
You know, so sometimes you have to make that decision. Do I need to rebluff here? But that's a scary thing. Because if you're wrong, you know, now you're going deep, you know, because you're re-bluffing and the guy says all in, you know, or, you know, my analogy was that he went all in, so there wasn't an opportunity for rebluff. But, of course, what you're saying is there's much more chips. You're playing a lot deeper. You may bet he raises and there's still a lot of chips for each player behind. So many times you will have to make that determination. Do I need to kind of go for this here and trust this read, the betting patterns and everything added up, plus delayed reaction of the physical read that you get that happened really with nothing to do with the cards. And that's the big key. And I'll tell you this. This one, you know, this is one of the ones for me where I really debated if I was going to do this for the show. And I'll tell you, for the listeners, you know, really, this is a good one. I hope I really explain this well, and maybe people can go back in the podcast and listen to it a couple times if I didn't come across perfect. But this one, I really debated in my mind if I would give this one for the show because this one, to me, is a good one. This is one where, you know, if you can get this concept and kind of start to use this and see this, this can make you a lot of money in poker and really be helpful. So I hope it does work for a lot of the players, and they can get to this, you know, if they're at the beginner or intermediate level. But it's really to do with the timing of when they looked strong and if that adds up to make sense. Typically, again, it's the first reaction. It's immediately as soon as the flop comes out, or it's immediately as soon as the turn comes out. Before there's even any action or the action gets to them, you should be able to tell that they have a strong hand because what triggered the reaction was the card, and it hit them. If it's the bet or the bluff and it's well after, that's much more likely the bluff.
Yep, and I agree with both you and Dennis. Sometimes you got to say to yourself, does the story he's trying to tell me add up?
Absolutely.
And if it doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're making the hero call there, but sometimes you're getting it good.
What I hate about it, the same thing that Joe touched upon, because he's got some great insights here on it, is when you absolutely are positive this guy thinks he has the worst hand, and you look at your own and you're weak as heck too. It's like, man, he knows. He really thinks he's losing this hand.
Yeah, I know this guy's got nothing. Unfortunately, I have less.
Yeah, it's Joe, the funny thing, you know, when you say that, Dennis, that reminded me of a hand two nights ago. I flop a king high flush. Now, ooh, there was a straight flush out there, and, of course, the ace high flush is out there. I have a tight player calling me behind the whole way. I lead out on the flop, he calls. I lead in the turn, he calls. I make a big bet on the river, he calls. Excuse me. I make a big bet on the river. He raises me. Oh, I look over at him. I'm like, I know. You know, the betting pattern tells, the physical tells, everything is lining up where he thinks he's got the best hand. You know, and I have to determine, can I get a re-raise in here with the king-high flush that I flopped? You know, monster hand. You know, as it turned out, he only had a jack-high flush, which to me was at the bottom of his range that he would re-raise me with on the river. I actually thought the bottom of his range would be a queen-high flush for this particular player. know, certainly a lot of other players would re-raise the river with a 5-eye flush. 4-5, you know, of diamonds, and they flopped a flush. They'll wait to the river and re-pop it and, you know, easily call or move all in against those type of players. But this player, I was positive in my mind with everything adding up that he was convinced he had the best hand, so I could only just call. I didn't want to jeopardize. We're sitting pretty deep. You know, I debated there quite a bit, so that's very similar to what you're talking about, Dennis.
All right, that's Joe, the poker coach, McGowan. We'll take a break and come back with more of the Lumiere Plays Final Table. With Joe and Dennis, I'm Paul. This is Five Night of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
That Yuletide soul is in the air.
Merry Christmas, pretty baby.
Aaron Neville and his quintet, featuring Charles Neville.
This is my Christmas
A holiday show like no other, Friday, December 11th at the Lumiere Theater.
I'll be happy.
Tickets are on sale at Etc. inside Lumiere Place or at Ticketmaster.com for $35. Don't miss Aaron Neville Christmas.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, live from downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Hotel and Casino. By the way, one quick plug for a new thing that they've got here. It's a new game, a new table game, not in the poker room, but in the casino. It's called Mississippi Stud, which plays like five-card stud, which I haven't played since the days of the old home games where, you know, it was dealer's choice. Sometimes every once in a while I throw in a five-card stud and we pretend we were in the movie The Cincinnati Kid playing against Steve McQueen. And
how many times you get an ace high straight? Called a royal?
None.
Okay.
But anyway, that new game, Mississippi Stud, is on the floor now here at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and the poker coach Joe McGowan, and we're joined now from John Pappas from the Poker Players Alliance. Hi, John. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
We're happy to have you on. We're happy to have the PPA as a sponsor. We're always urging our listeners to become members by going to your website, thePPA.org. The reason we wanted to have you on here today is because we understand there's been a change in some laws affecting poker players, particularly online poker players, with the UIGEA. Fill us in.
Sure. Well, as most online poker players know, a bill was passed in 2006 that seeks to restrict people from depositing money onto online poker sites or unlawful internet gambling sites, whatever that may be. We argued that online poker shouldn't be included in that definition. But over the last 3 years, once this law was finalized, there were regulations that were to be finalized as well and enforced. The PPA was successful in delaying that. They were supposed to go into effect on December 1st, actually today. The PPA petitioned both the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve, who are the primary agencies responsible for enforcing this law. And we sought a one-year delay and were granted a six-month delay last week, which essentially says that the administration has said, okay, we agree with you. There are some serious problems and flaws with this bill, and it's now really up to Congress to go back and try to correct it. So while there hasn't been a change in policy, there's certainly been a change in the posture, and I think this is going to lead to a real opportunity to make some effective change over the next 6 months.
Well, I know you've gotten some new allies, some different people that have joined in basically to get this delayed and such. Do you see a markup of Barney Frank's bill soon, this week, next week, sometime coming around?
Well, he's doing a hearing of his legislation this week, scheduled for Thursday. Now, that will just be an informational hearing. There'll be a variety of witnesses to talk about how Internet gaming can be regulated, how children can be protected, how, you know, there can be services for problem gamblers, money laundering, et cetera. Kind of the typical concerns and the rhetoric that you hear from our opponents spill out there that, you know, once you bring this online, you're going to have all these addictions, you're going to have children playing, you're going to have money laundering, et cetera. All of which, you know, obviously can be controlled through licensing and regulation, and it is already being done overseas. So he's going to have that hearing, and based on that hearing, I think, you know, that might set the time frame for when a markup, a vote in committee would be. I suspect that it could slip until January for an actual vote in committee. But nevertheless, this hearing on Thursday is very important. The PPA has been essentially working all year for this moment. We've been educating every member of the committee on the benefits of regulation and why it helps protect consumers, not only as a consumer protection vehicle, but also as a revenue raiser for the federal government. So we feel very, very confident that we're going to have a good hearing, and that, you know, once we do have a vote in the committee, that it will go our way.
Well, I love the idea that you've got this informational hearing, because it's like we were talking about earlier in the show, when a story doesn't add up and all the other items like that, the opposition story doesn't add up. If we can actually get in front of these and be informative and explain to them how the regulations can be enforced, how this can be beneficial to the government monetary-wise, I mean, there's so many things. It just doesn't add up.
And I also like Barney's basic point, which he mentioned when we talked to him at the World Series this summer, which was, it's not the government's business what you do with your money.
Yeah, that's the baseline of it, too. Not only is it wrong what they're doing, why are they even doing it in the first place?
So
yeah,
I know
it certainly rubs... interesting way, you know, I don't know if people, your listeners, are familiar with Ron Paul. He was, you know, a very popular libertarian candidate for president, holds some very libertarian views. He is probably the polar opposite politically from, you know, a liberal Massachusetts Democrat like Barney Frank, yet they are both supporters of this legislation. They view this as a freedom issue, as a personal freedom issue, as a personal responsibility issue, and, you know, why, you know, there should be obviously appropriate government oversight, but there shouldn't be a government policy to prevent people from playing a $2 sit and go. That just seems outrageous.
Well, it's wrong from so many levels. That level, the freedom one, why are they even involved in it at all? And if you take the different opinion that they should be involved in it, then get involved and get it regulated. I don't understand. Both ends of it should be fighting for this.
John, what kind of support are you getting from congressmen other than Frank and Paul?
Oh, well, I mean, Chairman Frank's bill has almost 70 co-sponsors as it stands. Many of those serve on the Financial Services Committee. I think nearly 20 of them are on the Financial Services Committee. So we're already at a very good head start on the committee in terms of support. You know, it's an education
process. How many are in the
Dennis said is that, you know, Friday is or Thursday's hearing is important because, you know, in an open, honest debate, I think we win. It's very hard to... You know, our opponents will spew a lot of rhetoric and a lot of assertions that aren't backed up by fact. But we have facts, and we have the data to back up our points. So we look forward to this, you know, this debate.
I love it. If you pull back the cover and actually look at the facts, it's pretty dang simple.
Yes, it is.
And that's what this meeting is for. We've been wanting it for a year now. So this is great. And I was hoping the markup, I was hoping that meeting Thursday would go so well that this markup, they would bring it out of committee very quickly. I guess I was getting optimistic.
Well,
January.
Dennis, you could be right. That could happen. I am just trying to, I'm kind of couching, you know, hedging my bets, if you will, because I know that the committee schedule is extremely busy, as well as the House calendar is extremely busy. So they may not want to bring this vote up until they have a little more time in January of next year. They're obviously fighting to get a few things out before they break for the Christmas holidays or the holidays. And, you know, so I just am being cautious that, you know, we could still have a good hearing on Thursday, but the markup may still wait for a couple more weeks until they get back from the Christmas break.
John Pappas from the Poker Players Alliance. They need you as a member. This costs $20 to sign up and join. You can do it online by going to their website, theppa.org. John, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Hey, guys, thank you so much, and I appreciate you guys bringing such great exposure to our cause.
Once again, the website is theppa.org.
And, John, just like before, if you need me, if I can do anything in Washington, give a holler, I can hop on a plane pretty darn easy.
Hey, Dennis, you've been great, and we will certainly follow up with you on your next trip to D.C.
All right, perfect. Thank you again very much.
Take care.
Now, while we're talking about fighting for the rights of poker players, you had a story you said to me, I got to mention this on the show today, about some housewives. No, not housewives. Grandmas. Grandmothers who got busted in a home game.
I almost have to read this. It's so farcical. It's unbelievable. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
42 women between the ages of 75 and 95 were arrested at a private home game in Cyprus this week. The youngest one was 75, and they were playing poker at this. They were playing both a combination of poker and gin rummy, that horrible game.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. They raided it, took the people in. They confiscated almost, between the 75 people, almost 100 pounds. Wow. You know, and 546 playing chips and 530. Somebody counted the cards they confiscated.
Yeah.
What the heck is this?
Well, you know what? Thank God they broke up that granny poker playing ring once and for all. They have taught them a lesson.
And they were doing it so late. It was at 6 p.m.
They are destroying their lives.
Oh, my gosh.
They will never grow up to be anything good.
And that detrimental. Boy, when they reach an age, I'm telling you.
That's unbelievable. One other item we got to get to before we leave here. A little leftover from the World Series of Poker. You have said so many times you don't win the main event on day one.
This is true.
Of the people who played on the four day ones, how many do you think even cashed?
Oh, I'd have absolutely no idea, but I can name a dozen that didn't. They were way up there on it.
How about of the chip leaders, day 1A, 1B, 1C, and 1D?
Well, I know at least one cashed.
Well, that was Joe Cato was the chip leader at the end of day 1C,
yes.
And eventually went on to win the whole
right.
thing. The other three?
Yeah.
Eliminated, did not get a penny.
See, that's so ludicrous. How can you get that many chips on day one? And not even make the money.
I know. There's a guy who made it through day 1A and then became the chip leader on day 2A, and he got eliminated and did not cash. The chip leader on day 2B finished in 226th place, so at least he got paid. Elke was the chip leader on day 3. He finished in 122nd place. A guy from Seattle, Washington finished in 8th place after being the chip leader on day 4. A guy from South Africa was the chip leader on day 5. He finished in 22nd place. And then on day 6, Darvin took over, and Darvin Moon was the leader on day 6 and 7 and 8 and ended up cashing in second place.
And again, that's why that first day of the tournament, the people that are the cheerleaders, the way they got there,